This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Swuhib, coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Uganda's new police bosses have been given a big job, rebuild public confidence in an institution that has seen its image damaged by soaring crime.
That was Halima Tumani reporting from Kampala. Full details coming up.
Also in Sierra Leone, the Electoral Commission continues to count ballots 1 week after voters chose from among 16 competing political parties. And the United Nations Human Rights Office is calling on the Eritrean government to immediately release all people who are arbitrarily detained.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, in Sierra Leone, the Electoral Commission continues to count ballots 1 week after voters chose from among 16 competing political parties. So far, 75% of the results for the presidential polls have been released. They show the two top contenders nearly neck and neck, each with under 45% of the vote. Opposition candidate Julius Maada Bioa of the Sierra Leone People's Party has 43.4%. less than 1 point ahead of the ruling All People's Congress Party's Samora Kamara with 42.7%. The release of the remaining 25% has been bogged down by calls for recounts of ballot boxes where the political parties have alleged discrepancies. VOA's William Eagle asked our Freetown reporter Kelvin Lewis if any of the other competing parties have conceded defeat.
Yes, some of the smaller parties have started conceding. At least the Unity Party, which is being headed by a woman, conceded and told me that she knew that she wouldn't win because according to the numbers that were coming out in the results for her, she said that she had lost faith in the women and that the women were not ready to support her. So she had conceded defeat, as also had a few other of the smaller parties who had less than 3%.
Kelvin, the latest results show a very close race between the candidates of the top two parties. How likely is a runoff, and how soon after an election must one be held?
Well, the number of votes remaining had been around 800 and something, and any of the two were needing something like 600 to be able to cross the 55% mark, which is the statutory mark that if you score above 55%, then you automatically would be declared president. But in this case, since both of them have scored max in the 42-43% rate, they have not qualified, and it was quite unlikely that any of them would get 600 votes from the 25%. So the results are out, and a runoff has been declared because none of them, as I say, got 55%, and they would be going into a runoff 2 weeks from now on the 27th of March.
Are all the parties satisfied with the results so far? And is anyone contesting the results in court, or have they gone to the Electoral Commission to complain?
No, not all of the parties are satisfied. The National Grand Coalition, headed by Kande Kole Yumkala, is not satisfied, and they are claiming that there are systemic and widespread irregularities, and they were calling for a rerun. As also the C4C, headed by former Vice President Alhaji Samsumana, are also claiming that there have been systemic irregularities and that they want a recount of the whole elections.
Also, how did the parties do in legislative elections?
Well, I guess after announcing the presidential results now, that the National Electoral Commission will then move on to start looking at the local councils, which includes the mayor, chairman, and councillors.
That was reporter Kelvin Lewis in Freetown. He was speaking with VOA's William Eagle.
Uganda's new police bosses have been given a big job, rebuilt public confidence in an institution that has seen its image damaged by soaring crime. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala on the reshuffle of top officers in the national police.
Unsolved matters, including those of a police boss, a state prosecutor, Muslim clerics and women, attacks on residents, robberies and the recent killings of foreigners in hotels, that is the crime scene in Uganda. Police corruption compounds the problem. With public frustration growing, President Yoweri Museveni last week named Okoth Martins Ochola as the Inspector General of Police, with Brigadier Sabiti Mzee as his deputy. The reshuffle came just a few days after the kidnap and brutal murder of a young woman whose captors warned her relatives not to call the police. One of the kidnappers was recorded saying, "We are working with the police and would know if the family sought help." This was just one of many cases in which police have been implicated in crime. Only a few officers have been held to account for criminal activities. The police also have been seen working with militias and criminal groups during police operations, thus discrediting investigations. One suspect, Juma Muirwa, confessed before journalists that many criminals work with the police. He says police in patrol cars protect him and his comrades, and they were taken to a rich man's house. When they got there, Muirwa says the police handed us pangas and told them to get to work, attacking the residents. The police protect them, he says. President Museveni last week said the police have long been infiltrated by criminals. With Ochola at the head of the force, many in Uganda now hope for greater security and accountability. He has been on the force 30 years and is seen as a disciplinarian. He also served as a legal officer, which may indicate more criminal investigations will go through proper procedures. His new deputy, Brigadier Mzee, comes from the military, where he had been commander of the military police. Despite the allegations of corruption, police spokesperson Emiliano Kaima says the force provides security for all Ugandans.
A few incidents that happen that probably even threaten all of us, they are bad enough. But this is not to say that we are in disarray. In the near future, the new team that comes, I'm sure, will have a roadmap. And you shall see if there are gaps that have been exploited by this criminality, they'll be purged. But we are here to serve.
However, political analyst Godbert Mshabe says he expects little change.
I actually don't think that there's a change of guard. I think we are still at this exactly the same point. Because the chief security person in this country is President Museveni. So as long as he's the president, commander-in-chief, the appointing authority, I doubt that any of these guys have the ability to transform the security architecture of this country.
For Ugandans, a new police administration focusing on the state will hopefully be reason enough to restore confidence in the police force. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
The United Nations Human Rights Office is calling on the Eritrean government to immediately release all people who have been arbitrarily detained and ensure that they get fair trials. Today, a senior rights official updated the UN Human Rights Council on the rights situation in Eritrea. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
For years, groups such as Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International have considered Eritrea one of the most repressive countries in the world. There is no independent media, critics of the government are routinely arrested, and most young people are forced into years of national service, which some liken to slavery. UN Deputy High Commissioner for Human Rights, Kate Gilmore, who presented Wednesday's report, says the human rights situation for Eritrea's people has not improved.
Arbitrary detention without charge or trial are still the norm in the country, affecting thousands imprisoned, languishing within the country's jail cells, including those who were reportedly arrested after participating in the funeral of the 93-year-old founder of an Islamic school who himself had been arrested for opposing the takeover of the school by the state.
Thousands of people reportedly were rounded up when demonstrations broke out at the cleric's funeral earlier this month. Gilmore says a UN delegation to Eritrea in October raised a number of troubling human rights concerns with authorities.
We emphasize the need to strengthen the rule of law and to ensure access to justice. We urged an end to indefinite national service, which is the root cause of so many human rights violations. We asked that information on the whereabouts of disappeared persons be provided urgently, as should access for the families of those in detention.
Gilmore says the UN delegation urged the Eritrean government to implement a constitution under which human rights are fully protected. She says the government said it was still considering a review of the constitution, something that Eritrean officials have raised as a possibility before, but with no actual results. Gilmore says her office is committed to working with the government in hopes of bringing about tangible reforms to end decades of human rights violations. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thousands of Ethiopians have fled to neighboring Kenya after Ethiopian military forces opened fire and killed at least 10 people and wounded several more Saturday in Moyale, a town in the Oromia region in the southeastern part of the country. More than 8,000 refugees so far have arrived in a town in Kenya's Marsabit County. Aid groups say the number is expected to increase. The Kenyan Red Cross and the United Nations Refugee Organization are providing them with assistance. Yvonne Ndegi, the UNHCR spokeswoman in Kenya, says the agency is setting up an additional mission in the field to help new arrivals. The Kenyan Refugee Affairs Department is working with the UNHCR so the refugees are provided with humanitarian aid. On Saturday, the Ethiopian military said it accidentally killed several civilians in Moyale after receiving incorrect information that members of the Oromo Liberation Front, a militant organization, was operating in the area. People who fled to Kenya say the military operation is still ongoing.
Delegates from across Africa are attending the Commonwealth Africa Summit in London, where the theme this year is the common good. Topics under discussion include climate change and gender equality. The Commonwealth has its origins in the British Empire. Most members are former colonies. As Henry Ridgewell reports from London, Britain is hoping to rekindle those ties as it leaves the EU.
19 African countries are members of the Commonwealth, an organization that encompasses one-third of the world's population. The opening summit address was given by Maria Fernandez de la Vega, president of the Women for Africa Foundation.
Frente a la cada vez mayor tolerancia a la desigualdad.
She said that in the face of the ever greater tolerance of inequality, we have to continue to cry out for equality. She said the combination of young people and women together will allow us to take a new look at Africa. Issues like gender equality are being tackled by other institutions like the United Nations and the African Union. So what is the point of the Commonwealth? Sue Onslow is from the Institute for Commonwealth Studies at the University of London.
There is a general interest and value which is attached to the Commonwealth as a political imagination, to the access and networks that it offers, to possibilities of best practice, and to, indeed, emphasising communalities of working together.
Gambia was last month readmitted to the Commonwealth after a four-year absence following the democratic election of President Adama Barrow. Zimbabwe has indicated that it may apply to rejoin after it was suspended in 2002 following concerns over unfair elections. Caroline Campila, a Zimbabwean citizen living in London attending the conference, hopes Zimbabwe will soon be readmitted.
We've been isolated for such a long time and we really want to be where other people are, where other nations are.
Interest in the Commonwealth has also revived in Britain, where the government hopes increased trade could help to make up for any losses after leaving the European Union. Again, analyst Sue Onslow.
Quite frankly, I find that idea laughable because the Commonwealth is the antithesis, the very opposite of the EU as a bureaucratic trading bloc.
Nonetheless, Britain is aiming to strengthen ties when it hosts the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting next month, when the leaders of all 53 member nations will gather in London and at the Royal Family's residence at Windsor Castle. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib. 20 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. In Sierra Leone, the Electoral Commission continues to count ballots 1 week after voters chose from among 16 competing political parties. Uganda's police department is trying to rebuild public confidence in an institution that has seen its image damaged by soaring crime. And the United Nations Human Rights Office is calling on the Eritrean government to immediately release all people who are arbitrarily detained. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
As head of the Central Intelligence Agency, Mike Pompeo earned a reputation as a strong ally of President Donald Trump, known for tough views on terrorism, torture, and Iran. Yesterday, Trump nominated Pompeo to become Secretary of State, replacing the fired Rex Tillerson. Trump said he and Pompeo are always on the same wavelength. The 53-year-old served as a congressman from the Midwestern state of Kansas before taking over the CIA in 2017. A graduate of the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, Pompeo also has a law degree from Harvard Law School. After law school, the California native moved to Kansas and ran two successful businesses. As CIA chief, Pompeo garnered criticism for comments that at times appeared to contradict the agency's findings that Russia interfered in the 2016 election to help Trump win. The Senate will need to confirm Pompeo's nomination with hearings expected next month.
International resettlement experts from seven countries are gathering in Sydney, Australia today to look at ways to help millions of people displaced by the war in Syria. The summit will also release the first results of a research project looking at how 12,000 refugees from the conflict have adapted to life in Australia. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney.
A study funded by the Australian Research Council has tracked the lives of 200 Syrian and Iraqi families who've been resettled in the state of Queensland. They were part of an emergency intake of refugees from the Syrian crisis and arrived in Australia in 2016 and 2017. The survey found that while most were happy to forge new lives in Australia, there was deep frustration at the lack of employment. Jock Collins, a professor of social economics at the University of Technology Sydney Business School, was part of the research team.
There is a frustration about work. They're very highly educated people, dentists, sort of pharmacists, engineers, major positions in multinational corporations. So very, very sort of strong achievements in a professional life. They're anxious to get going here and they find they haven't been able to do that. There's a frustration about that. Basically, the key point is that getting a job is difficult but critical.
Typically, refugees in Australia suffer disproportionately high rates of unemployment. The University of Technology Sydney estimates that only about 17% of recently arrived refugees in Australia are working. Community leaders worry that those statistics can influence the way the broader Australian community considers refugees. Atem Atem, a Sudanese community leader who arrived in Australia in 2002, is a university graduate. He attended the Sydney Resettlement Summit and believes high rates of unemployment can stir negative perceptions of those fleeing persecution.
If you are someone who lives in the suburbs and who has never met a refugee and you just hear refugee stories, which is the majority of the population, then you think that we shouldn't have refugees because they're hopeless. Those are the stories that you hear in the media. And a lot of people who just get information from the media, which is the majority of the Australian population, believe that refugees are not good for Australia, that they are not contributing.
Australia typically grants refugee visas to about 14,000 people each year through official humanitarian programs. Asylum seekers who arrive by boat have been detained in offshore camps run by Australia in the South Pacific. They've been told they'll never be allowed to resettle in Australia under a strict policy designed to stop asylum seekers risking their lives at sea. Critics of the policy say it's inhumane and breaches international law. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
The World Health Organization reports an alarming spike in violence against medical and humanitarian workers and healthcare facilities in Syria. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The World Health Organization reports it has verified dozens of attacks on healthcare facilities, ambulances, services, and workers in Syria's combat zones this year. WHO's monitoring system reports 28 hospitals and other facilities last month were targeted in eastern Ghouta, which currently is under relentless air and ground attack from Syrian forces and their Russian ally. Spokesman Christian Lindemeyer says healthcare facilities also were hit in Idlib and Homs.
In all, the 67 verified attacks on health facilities and workers in the first 2 months of this year amount to more than 50% of verified attacks in all of 2017, which totaled 112. These unacceptable attacks resulted in the deaths of 19 people, among them 4 health workers. The attacks also left 28 people injured, 7 of them medical staff.
Lindmeyer says the attacks have had devastating consequences for the civilian population in these combat zones. In the month of February alone, he says violent incidents disrupted 15,000 medical consultations and nearly 1,500 surgeries, many life-saving. The World Health Organization is calling on all of Syria's warring parties to immediately stop attacking people caring for the sick and wounded. It warns attacks against medical facilities and medical personnel are prohibited under international humanitarian law and, in certain instances, may amount to war crimes. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our African News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Suleiman Trayawali, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them.
At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.